What we saw over Christmas was quite a high level of contact from women for the first time, which, you know, women who just felt that they really couldn't take it. And I think sometimes that is that whole thing of we're all sort of attuned to the idea of coming to the end of the year or going into a new year, of reflecting on where we are. And is this what my life is really like? And what do I need to do? And is there something that maybe I've been hoping is going to improve, and I've been waiting, and I've been, but now you're coming nearer to a kind of decision making about that, and realizing that at least maybe you just need a space to talk about it more openly. Because I think in our experience, a lot of women are just holding it all together. They're holding themselves together. So the having the space to actually talk very freely about it allows their thinking to free up as well. Because if they're kind of excusing some of the behaviour in the hope that it's going to change, they've been containing some of their disappointment around that, their frustration, their anger, their complete disappointment around that. And the words that a lot of the people who've been working on the helpline over the Christmas used was that it was a very bleak time for a lot of women. That it was just very bleak Christmas, completely the opposite to what people, you know, for an awful lot of people, like people are returning in women's aid back from leave and saying they had a nice, you know, this kind of this expectation that it's been a nice time. So that makes that much tougher. There was an interesting piece of research that was released in 2014. It was a survey that was done right across Europe. So it was 28 countries in Europe, and the survey results were released, and there were interviews, face-to-face interviews with women about their experience of violence. And one of the things that was I found particularly interesting in relation to it was that when you look at what helps women overcome the abuse and move on, a lot of what made the difference was family and friends. And we know from, we hear this all the time, like family and friends are so supportive, being there for women, minding their kids when they have to go to court, sometimes having to take them in, having to mind their stuff, all sorts of different ways, being the person that they can ring if they're, you know, if they're worried, or their kind of point of alert, or maybe minding money for them if they're trying to leave or whatever. So those are really important. Resilience was really important as well. But what would probably come as a shock to a lot of people is changes in the abusive partner's behaviour was very low. It was even lower in Ireland than it was actually in the rest of Europe. So it was less than 10%. So I think that hope that women have that their partner is going to change, sometimes they have to go through that, because work their way through that. Because if you're married to somebody and you've had kids with somebody and you've bought a house, or if you're not married, but you've invested in this relationship, you're tied into this relationship in so many ways, very often with the price of childcare. An awful lot of women have given up work if they've a couple of kids because it's so desperately expensive. So they find themselves in very difficult economic situations, and we live in very harsh times. So what we found with the recession is that that makes it much more difficult. And the things that people said that were important was having the opportunity to talk about it. And a lot of women would even say when they ring the helpline, they've maybe talked to friends or family, but there's certain things they just felt they couldn't tell anybody. But because we have an anonymous confidential helpline, it's much easier to talk. It's not that it's easy to talk, but it's easier to talk to somebody if you're not, you know, I think a lot of women find that easier. If you're not face to face, you're not worrying about that person. You're not thinking about, if I tell them this, what's going to happen later down the line, yeah. You know.
And I suppose you're thinking, what will they think, or will they look at me later and judge me if I stay with him, or all that type of thing. Is there comfort as well, though, for women in the sense that, you know, they may think that they're the only person experiencing this. I mean, I guess they know that they aren't, but in a sense, when they're in that particular space, they may feel like, God, I'm the only one, and why didn't I see the warning signs, and how did I get myself into this situation? You know, that there's a sense of taking responsibility on themselves, or blame on themselves, so that when they maybe ring places like your organisation, they see that it's a pattern, it's a phenomena, it's a social phenomena, if you like.
It's a social phenomenon. And I think the other thing is to bear in mind is we live in a very victim-blaming culture. So, you know, the most common thing, if you talk about, I mean, if I talked about some of the cases over the Christmas, there was some very severe physical abuse, very dangerous abuse, very life-threatening situations. So people will go, well, why doesn't she just leave? So immediately the focus goes onto her, as if it's her fault for not leaving, it's her fault for getting into this situation. Whereas the whole story, when you start to unfold that story, is somebody who's become involved with somebody who's, you know, gradually got involved in the relationship. As the trust has built up, they've become more trusting, but very often that trust is abused. Like, for a quarter of women, the first time that they're physically assaulted, of women who are physically assaulted, is when they're pregnant. So they're already into the relationship. So there's all these patterns that there. And very, very often what we hear about abusive partners is they are continually saying to her, "This is your fault. I wouldn't have to hit you if you were a good mother. If you kept this house clean, if you, you know, had the dinner ready on time, if you didn't spend more than you do on housekeeping." You know, the litany of, you know, things that are thrown at women is absolutely phenomenal. And the level of emotional and psychological abuse is huge. And I think people very often underestimate how corrosive that is. So that very strong, independent-minded women, nobody is going to be able to withstand that. It's a bit like, if you think of it like torture, somebody thinks, you know, if you're going to be tortured, if you're mentally going to be tortured, that's going to wear you down. There is no way. It's like assuming that you can go out in the rain and you're not going to get wet. All of those things have an impact on you. And the thing about intimate partner relationship and abuse, or somebody who knows you, they know you well enough to know what really is going to get at you. You know, that if you don't really care about how you look, they're not going to comment on that. But if you do care about how you look, they'll start saying, "Well, you know, you're really going to see it. You look terrible if you're really house proud." So what we see is this pattern of, you know, finding a way to get at her. And I think the other things that are very common in relationships is isolation. So again, if you're moved away from your support base, you're going to start to believe in this more, that it is your fault, that you are the only person. So there's a huge strength in reaching out and making that call and realizing this is something that's happening to one in five Irish women. This is, we get around 40, between 40 and 50 calls a day. This is happening around in homes all across the country. There is nothing unusual about somebody that's happened into this. It's all ages, all backgrounds, all cultural beliefs, all religious beliefs, all professions, all educational levels. There is no kind of neat category that you can say the type of woman this happens to is X. It is right across the board.
And when you talk there about the things that men say, I mean, maybe, do they believe that? They probably do, I suppose. I mean, in their own minds, they are justifying their behaviour, or they are seeing, well, you know, if she was better, then I wouldn't have to do this. You know, that in some way that they do see that. I mean, is there any work done on men's attitudes or how they understand it?
Well, there's some very interesting work that's been done by a man called Don Hennessy, who's worked in the down in Cork in marriage counselling. And what he's worked with perpetrators of abuse over a long period of time. And he would say, actually, this is very intentional. It's very planned a lot of the time, that it is very deliberate, that it is about making her dependent and wanting her to be there to look after his needs, whether they're sexual needs, you know, caring needs, servicing needs, you know, whatever it is. And that it is really about power and control. So that I think very often, for a lot of women, particularly in the last number of years, they will have been going through a process where they're saying, "Well, he's just been made redundant. He's feeling really bad. So if he's lashing out at me and saying all these things, it's some sort of internal..." You know, there's all sorts of things that they're trying to thinking through in their heads and trying to make sense of. But the work that somebody like that is saying is very often these men are actually looking around for some woman that they can control, in a sense. And what's interesting about what Don says is he said the most common kind of pattern that he sees in the women who've been abused, because he would also see women who have been abused, is that they're very kind, and that men can see this, that this is a woman who's going to be caring. This is a woman who is going to take some of the knocks, is going to try and understand me, is going to try and care for me. And so that I think is very often a surprise, and very often people will be very resistant to that, because people commonly think, oh, it's drink, oh, it's depression. And obviously those things feed in. But drink feeds in, for example, in a different kind of way. It's not the cause of abuse. There are loads of women who contact us and their partner abuses them when he's drinking and when he's not drinking. it's what it does do is, because it's a disinhibitor, the level of abuse is far more serious. The frequency of the abuse can be far more serious. There was, again, that piece of European research I was talking about. If you have a partner who drinks regularly and drinks, it has a couple of drinks rather than being a very moderate drinker, they are 4.5 times at a higher level of risk than women who are being abused, who have a partner who's not drinking or drinks in sort of very minimal way. So if what it does is it escalates the frequency, it escalates the severity, it escalates the risk.
It's very cynical to think, I know, of men sort of going around and looking and trying to pick out somebody. From the point of view of women spotting men like that or noticing early traits, what are those early traits?
Well, we do a campaign actually every year that it's called Two Into You, where we're targeting younger women. We've been running it for a number of years now, because I think one of the saddest things I think myself is that if a woman contacts you and she's in her 70s and 80s and she's been living with abuse for maybe 30 years, 40 years, and never knew that there was service there and never knew that this was something that was actually happening to so many women, because as you said earlier, so many women believe they're the only one and it's their fault. So we're trying to get to women earlier. And in that, what we do is we have it on our website, and we also have it on the website called Two Into You, which looks at healthy behaviours in relationships and unhealthy. So there's kind of a little health quiz, and it's really about dating violence. And it's about helping women to spot unhealthy behaviours in a relationship early on so that they don't get sucked in. And because it's much more difficult to get out of a relationship by the time you've bought a house together, you have kids together, etc. Now, I think the other thing is people probably think this is a bit extreme, but also with that kind of cohort of women that we're talking about, younger women, women who are in dating relationships, for women in that category as well, we would often hear from women who've gone out with a guy for about 6 weeks, maybe a bit longer, maybe even 6 months, and start thinking, this is not for me, this guy's a bit weird, don't like a lot of the things that are happening. They will very often continue to be stalked and harassed by him, sometimes for months and months and months. So somebody could be going out for 6 weeks, and 6 months later they still have not got this guy out of their lives, because he's intent on getting what he wants, and he wants this relationship with her. In a sense, he sees it as irrelevant whether she wants to be in the relationship with him. So it's about him trying to insert himself. And he does that through the whole gambit of we had a poster donkeys years ago, which was chocolates and flowers to multiple bruising. So it is, a lot of women will get flowers sent, I promise I'll never do this again, right through from threats to, if you don't come back, this is what I'm going to do to you, this is what I'm going to do to your family, I know where you live, I know where your family lives, and I'm going to, and then with social media, there's an awful lot of threats, and there's more immediate access to people now than there would have been in the past. The big thing that makes a difference to women is when they realise that they're not abnormal, they're not the problem. And I think having the opportunity to talk on the helpline, for a lot of women, they might need more immediate help. They might need to go to court and look for a court order, and we'd have a court accompaniment service. So they're the kind of things that they really need to know about. And I think once they start to realise that, they can start to actually deal with it. We have information on our website that is specifically designed to help women with these things. So, for example, there are particular apps that are really helpful. There are particular things that you can do depending on what your phone is. So all of those are on our website, which is just, if you just put in womensaid.ie, you'll get onto our website, and there's a lot of really good information about those kind of practical things that you can do. But I think the big thing is that erosion of confidence that women talk to us about afterwards. Like, if you were to come into our services team at the moment, you'll see a litany of, or just a rows and rows of thank you of cards and chocolates that continually come in for women who say, I'm in a much better place now because I had the opportunity to talk about this and I got the help I needed.
Margaret, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.